morning to each of you today. It's good to be here in this congregation and get acquainted with all of you. I have met several of you on the way in, and obviously some of you came in after I had sat down. So I'd like to meet you before the day's over and exchange greetings, and then I'll know everybody's name by heart. And no, that's not true. But I am glad to be here and appreciate your presence this morning. Look forward to not only today, but through Wednesday night, as we will be together, excited about that. So, somebody asked me, they're wanting to know the verse that would change your life. Well, you could pick any of them, I suppose. But my Bible's open this morning to the fourth chapter of Philippians, Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8. Philippians, the fourth chapter, and verse 8. Finally, brethren, summation. Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good report, if there is any excellence, if anything worthy of praise, let your mind dwell on these things. Let me ask you a question this morning as we begin our time together. How important is your thinking? Somebody says, well, I never thought about that. Well, there you go. Maybe you should. How important, how crucial to your life is your thinking? People always say, you are what you eat, and there's truth in that. But more importantly, ladies and gentlemen, you are what you think, and there's Bible in that. Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 7 says, as a man thinks within himself, what? So is he. So apparently your thinking and the way you think is crucial to the person you are. What you think about is important. So back to my original question. How important is your thinking? And what do you think about? Now, in this verse in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8, Paul tells us what to think about. Or at least he gives us some boundaries. He gives us some parameters. That if we would take this verse and get it out of the page and put it into our hearts and lives, it would change our lives. Because most people, I am convinced, most people are oblivious to the habitual way they think. In other words, they don't think about what they think about. But I will tell you, it is either or. Either you're going to be motivated to think in a God direction, in a godly direction, in a pure direction, with thoughts that are honoring Him, or you're going to be motivated to think thoughts that originate from somewhere else and from someone else. Your thinking is crucial to who you are. Now, a lot of what goes on in our life, we have zero control. We can't control what other people do. We can't control what other people say. We can't control the weather. We can't control the traffic. We can't control any of those things. But ladies and gentlemen, we have 100% complete control over the kind of thoughts that we allow ourselves to have. And what I'm saying to you this morning is, if we're going to make any kind of positive life change, that's where we have to start. Paul said so in Romans chapter 12 and verse 2. He said, don't be conformed to this world. Don't be like everybody else. Don't let the world take your life and squeeze it into its mold. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect or complete. He says it starts with the way you think. There's a direct correlation between your thoughts and the degree to which you experience enjoyment in life. You can't separate the two. There's a direct correlation between your thoughts and the atmosphere that settles in your home and your family. There's a direct correlation between your thoughts and how well you get along and interact with other people. Solomon said so. In Proverbs 4 and verse 23, he says, you better watch over your heart. And he says, you better give it diligence, because from it flow the springs of life. Your thoughts are crucial to who you are. Your thoughts are important. You know what limits us as people? What limits us as people is not our past. Because the last time I checked, we all have one. For one thing, Paul says in the book of Romans chapter 3, we all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And not only that, but we have things in our past and events in our past and people in our past over which we don't have any control. And there's rejection in our past, and there's loss in our past, and there's abandonment in our past, and there's just a bunch of stuff in our past. And I will tell you that we all have a past. So what limits us is not our past. Your past may be different from my past and mine from yours, but we all have one. So let's just get that out on the table. So what limits us is not our past. What limits us is not our present. I don't know anybody whose present circumstances are just absolutely every day 100% perfect. Could not be better. Paul certainly wasn't, and he's the one that wrote this. You know what limits us? If it's not our past, and if it's not our present, what limits us is the things we keep telling ourselves over and over and over again. And Paul says, you better discipline that. You know, we preachers get up and we talk a lot about discipline. Discipline this, discipline that. Paul says discipline starts in your mind with the way you think. He says, think on these things. Some translations render that dwell, ponder. Give your mind to these things. What things? He says, you better think about things that are true as opposed to false, as opposed to rumor. Some lady said something to me, not too long ago. It sounded crazy. And I said, how do you know that's true? She said, I read it on the internet. Well, there you go. There's the source of all things true. He says, listen, you need to think about things that you know are true and honorable as opposed to dishonorable, and right as opposed to wrong, and good and lovely and excellent, and all of those things. He says, this is what you need to think about. And guess what? If we did that, do you know how different our lives would be? If we would just engage in the 4-8 principle, think how we could impact the world. I mean, the world around us, starting with our family, starting with the people that God puts in our path. Jesus said in Matthew 5 and verse 16, let your light shine among others that they may see your good works and come to glorify your Father who is in heaven. Ladies and gentlemen, good works begin with good thoughts. And it all goes back to disciplining your mind. Because as a man thinks within himself, so is he. Now, Paul's the one that wrote this. And I suppose if anybody could be justified in being negative, it would have been Paul. He's unfairly accused. He's in prison. He's facing an unknown future, possibly death, because of his conviction in Christ. And he writes the book of Philippians, which, by the way, this letter is all about joy, which is interesting. But Paul could have written this letter, like some of us could have written this letter, and just kind of had the attitude that says, woe is me. You people don't know how hard my life is. And he could have talked about how the food was terrible, and he could have talked about how he's chained to these stinky, smelly guards all day long, how he's cold at night, how he's hungry during the day, how he's not free to come and go, you know, like you are over in Philippi. He could have talked about all of those things. He didn't. Instead, he writes a letter that says, rejoice in the Lord, and again, I say, rejoice. Here was a man who made a deliberate decision, a proactive decision to discipline his mind and to think thoughts that would bring honor to God. Why would he do that? Because Paul understood that our thoughts are a reflection of our faith in God. And that's true of Paul. That's true of you. That's true of me. It all goes back to the way we think. As a man thinks within himself, so is he. Now, you all don't know a lot about me, so I'm going to tell you three things about me that I am sure that's going to really impress you. Number one, I am not mechanical. People call my house and they ask my wife, they say, is Wilson handy? And she says, no, because I'm not handy. I mean, I have one tool in my toolbox. It's a hammer. If I can't fix it with a hammer, I'm not interested. Okay. I'm just not mechanically minded, have no just desire to go fix stuff, build stuff, whatever. I'm just not that way. I'm not wired that way. So I'm not mechanical. I'm not musically inclined. Everybody else in my family got the music gene. They play all these instruments and they sing and all of that. I don't know where I was when that got passed out, but I don't have it. I'm not very musically inclined. We've raised four kids. They're all grown and married. And as empty nesters, we decided to either downsize our house or upsize the rooms. And so we, 2 years ago, adopted three children from Eastern Europe who lived in an orphanage. And they now live with us. They're part of our family. And so now we're raising teenagers all over again. That's fun. And so every morning I drive our new daughter, Leah, she's 17 now, I drive her to high school, to a little smaller high school on the edge of the county. It's about 20 miles away. And so I take the trip in the morning, Julie goes and gets her in the afternoon, so we trade off. But every morning, and she's become quite the American teenager, we're barely in the car, and she pushes the radio and wants to listen to her stations. Well, we've listened to enough of her music now that I've learned some of the words. And so I start naturally to sing along. And she'll look at me and she'll say in her accented English, Dad, you sing terrible. Please, no sing. I just don't have the musical ear. I just don't. And I'm not into technology, you know. I'm not going to be using PowerPoint. I'm pretty good with a legal pad. I can handle that. And I have to use technology some because of my work, but I just don't really understand it. And, you know, sometimes it works great and sometimes it doesn't. And up until about 2 years ago, I had what I always referred to as a retro mobile device. Some would call it a flip phone. Anybody remember those? Does anybody want to admit to still using one? Nobody. All right. And so a couple years ago, I left my phone, the little place where Julie and I went to in the fitness center over the winter, and so I got home, I couldn't find it, and I told her, I said, I bet I left it there at that fitness center in that little cubicle thing, and I went back the next day, and sure enough, it was there. And I told our youngest son, who was still living at home, going to college at the time, I said, you know what that proves? That proves that people are still honest. He said, Dad, that proves nobody wants your stinking old phone. That's what that proves. He said, you've got to upgrade. You've got to get with it. You need to at least live in the century that you're in, you know? And so they made me upgrade. So now I have a cool phone. I don't understand it. But I can call and text halfway and all that kind of stuff. But I got to thinking one day, we need to upgrade our thinking. If you want to take that terminology and apply it here, it applies very well. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 16, verse 17, and verse 18, Paul writes and he says, rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. In everything, give thanks. Now, you want to talk about an upgrade? There's an upgrade. And yet somebody says, how can I rejoice always if there's some stuff going on in my life that's just not always that great? How can I give thanks if there's things happening for which I am not very thankful? Well, here it is. Upgrading your thinking to a rejoice always thinker, to a thankful thinker, does not mean that everything in your life has to be 100% perfect all the time. Listen, nobody's life is like that. Paul's wasn't. And yet in spite of the hardships of his life, he made a decision to emphatically wrap his arms around the living God and stand on his promises. And if he can do that, I can do that. And so can you. And it all goes back to the way you choose to think. Do you know joy? You know, Paul talks about in Galatians chapter 5, bearing the fruit of joy. Do you understand that joy is an outside sign of your inside faith? We teach the kids to sing, I've got the joy, 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 joy. Where? Down in my heart. Well, listen, Solomon says in the book of Proverbs, and in chapter 15 and verse 13, he says, if it's in your heart, it's going to show up on your face. It's a way of living your life that says, I may not understand why everything is happening in my life as it has. I may not understand God. I certainly don't understand the timing of God. But I have made a life choice, a life decision that I'm going to trust Him even though I don't understand Him. And I tell you what, folks, if we would live like that, the people around us would ask us, what in the world is your deal? And the answer is, my deal is Jesus, and He has changed my life, and He can change yours. I don't know why we get conditioned to think that joy is some kind of distant destination out here we hope to get to one day when everything falls into place and our ship comes in, or whatever phrase you want to use. And I get heaven. I understand the ultimate joy destination of heaven. I get that. But how do you think God wants His people to live between now and then? There is joy in the path that we travel every day. Life is what you make it. And God sets in front of us so many blessings that sometimes we get so caught up in the daily drama of things that we fail to understand really how blessed we are. My wife gets so put out with me sometimes. Because I'll go into the pantry. I'll open the door of the pantry and I'm standing there. And I'm looking for the staple of my diet, which is peanut butter. Crunchy. And I don't see it. And because the husband that I am, because of my maleness, I stand there and I look for a long time. 3 seconds. And after I have searched and searched and searched that pantry for 3 seconds, I holler out in my male voice and I say, "Hey, where's the peanut butter?" Now she's in the back bedroom and she hollers back and she says, "It's on the 3rd shelf, eye level." So now my search intensifies and I'm standing there and I'm looking and I'm looking and I'm looking, and now I look and I search for 4 seconds and it's not there. So that's when you give your best whiny husband voice that says, "I can't find it." So she stops what she's doing. She walks out of the bedroom, walks into the kitchen, reaches into the pantry, and hands me the peanut butter. Where was it? 3rd shelf, eye level. And she walks away mumbling something about husbands that I just sort of, tune out. Now, in my defense, my 3rd shelf eye level and her 3rd shelf eye level, I don't even think are the same thing. But be that as it may, I wonder sometimes if God doesn't place the joy of living and the joy of opportunity is right in front of our faces, and we allow all of the stuff of life to get in our vision field and get in our way and get in our thought processes, and we just don't see the blessings that He has provided us. If you can't get excited about the promises of God, if you can't get excited about the abundant life that Jesus offers and the hope that you have that others don't, what would it take? What would it take? We need to upgrade our life by upgrading our thinking, by upgrading our joy. I tell you what, if we would focus on Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8, we would be a lot more pleasant to be around. Things around us would be a lot more peaceful. Your marriage would be better because you make the conscious decision that says, "I'm going to focus on the good traits of my spouse rather than constantly nitpicking all of the faults." Your family life would get better because you would understand how brief a window of opportunity is yours, that you only have a small time to influence the lives of these children that God has placed in your path. Your relationship with your co-workers will get better. Your relationship with your brethren will get better. Your relationship with God will get better. It all goes back to the way you think and what you think about. Now, here's the kicker in all of this. Your thoughts are showing. It's hard to hide that. Your thoughts are showing. Because the secret little conversations we have with ourselves begin to shape who we are little by little, day by day. And you can start figuring that out. I read the other day the average person has 50,000 thoughts a day. Now, when I read that, my first thought was, what crazy person counts them? Seriously, think about it. Who goes around counting those things? Oh, there's a thought. There's one. I don't know how many thoughts a person has per day. And I will tell you this, I don't think anybody else knows how many thoughts a person has a day. Let's just say the average person has in the course of a day a bunch of them. We have a bunch of thoughts. And those bunches of thoughts will either lead you in one of two directions. They will either lead you closer to God and build your faith, or they will take you further from Him and destroy it. It will be one or the other. Jesus said that in Luke chapter 6 and verse 45. He said, "Your thoughts are showing." He said, "The mouth only speaks out of that which fills the heart." What comes out of the mouth simply tells people what's in the heart. And so when somebody says to you, "Oh, I'm sorry I said that. I spoke before I thought," it's not true. In fact, it's an impossibility. You can't divorce your thoughts from your speech. You can't divorce your thoughts from your actions. Jesus said that. Now, you can argue and say, I didn't think about it long enough. That would be true. But if you spoke it, if you did it, you first thought it. That's why our thoughts are so important. That's why Solomon said, as a man thinks, so is he. That's why Paul said, let your mind dwell on these things. The problem is the majority of thoughts we have today, simply we get into patterns of behavior that's just very hard to break sometimes. And we just keep repeating the same things over and over and over again. And that's why it's hard to change. But what he says in Scripture is, if we keep thinking the same things over and over and over again, nothing's going to change. Because if nothing changes, nothing's going to change. And change starts in the mind. It starts with the way we think. And listen, it doesn't matter what kind of life change you need to make. Maybe you need to make physical life changes. Maybe you need to make relational life changes. Maybe you need to make financial life changes. Maybe you need to make spiritual life changes. Doesn't matter what kind of changes you need to make. If you don't fix what's in here, not going to change. The results aren't going to be any different. You know, when God made us in the very beginning, when He created man, and every man since then, He gave to us a free will. Preachers get up and we talk about the free moral agency of man. Well, what does that mean? It simply means God doesn't make you do anything. He is not going to force you to think right any more than He's going to force you to read your Bible, or He's going to force you to pray, or He's going to force you to make good decisions, or He's going to force you to do anything. Right thinking, just like everything else, is your choice. So you can choose to live with a negative mindset. You can choose to live in doubt rather than faith. You can choose to worry. You can choose to be dominated by uncertainty. You can choose to be a drama king or a drama queen if that's what you choose to be. It's your choice. Or you can make the decision that says, you know, I'm going to work on my mind. I'm going to renew my thinking so that I can live my life in approval of the will of God. But you have to understand one more thing, and that is your mind can be retrained. Your mind can be reshaped. Somebody says, well, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Okay. I drove all the way down here, spending the day with you today, the week with you this week, and I'm going to give you right now something really heavy to take home with you. You ready? This idea, can't teach an old dog new tricks. You ready? Here it is. You're not a dog. Hello? I don't know how it works with dogs, but I know how it works with people. And I know that people can change. Paul said he did in the same Philippians chapter 4, after he said what he said about think on these things, and let your mind dwell on these things. He says in verse 11, not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. Hey, Paul, did that come natural for you? Did that come easy for you? No, he said, I had to learn that. There are some lessons there I had to learn. Look in verse 12. I know how to get along with humble means. I know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned. Oh, there it is again. I have learned the secret of being filled, going hungry, having abundance, and suffering need. Paul said there's some things I had to learn about my life. Anything you need to learn about yours? One of the things that all of us need to learn is this, that you're not so much the product of your circumstances as much as you are the product of your decisions you make about them. At some point in our lives, we have to take ownership of our lives. We have to take responsibility. I can't always choose the circumstances I face. You can't choose yours, but I can always choose my attitude in response to them. And why is that important? Because my attitude in response to my circumstances is a reflection of my faith in God. Bottom line, that's it. So the question is, when circumstances in your life happen for which you don't have the answers, the question is, how deep is your faith? How strong is your conviction? How secure is your trust? We got to do a better job thinking better. You see it in ball games all the time, whether it's basketball, football. You get toward the end of the game, maybe it's about halfway through the fourth quarter, and maybe the momentum has been in favor of one team, and then suddenly the momentum changes, and a coach begins to sense that the game is slipping away, and he'll say, "Timeout, timeout," and he gets his players over on the side, and he gets in their faces, and he says, "Get your minds, get your head back in the game." Why does he do that? Because they're tired. They're exhausted. And when that happens, you tend not to think clearly. And it's a reminder for them to get their thinking back where it needs to be. And sometimes God needs to do that to us and does it through the Scriptures. Or He does it through other people who come to us with a voice of wisdom and says, "You need to think about that." Or maybe a shepherd pulls you aside and says, "Hey, I'm concerned about this or that or some things going on. And you need to think about that. Get your mind back to where it needs to be." And you need to do that today. The secret to living a life that pleases God is not to make the decision that says, "I'll change tomorrow." But I'm going to change today. God gives to each of us a gift. It's called today. It's the present of being in the present. And the question is, what are we going to do with that present in the present? Now, if you choose to hang around negative people, faithless people, and you can't always avoid them, but sometimes we can make choices to be with them, guess what they're going to try to take away from you? 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33. I don't see any. Paul doesn't write 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 33 and say, "Oh, by the way, while I'm talking about all this other stuff, I want to give something to teenagers. You know, bad company corrupts good morals." 1 Corinthians 15, 33 is not written to just teenagers, it's written to all of us. Bad company corrupts us. And so we have to figure out a way to quarantine faithless negativity. If I go to Nashville and I'm getting at a hospital and I get on the elevator on the 10th floor and I start heading down at Vanderbilt or one of the other places, and I start heading down and somebody gets on right beside me and that person starts coughing and hacking and just going off and says, "I think I'm getting the flu." I don't know about you, but I've already hit 9. I'm getting off. I'm taking 9 floors of steps. I'm getting out of that. I don't want to be near that guy. Because that rubs off. It's contagious. Well, so is faithless negativity. We don't have time, but read Numbers 13 and 14. The spies, 2 people had the faith and 10 didn't. And look who impacted whom. And I'll leave you with this verse in 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 5. In fact, look it up. Look it up. How many? We got a couple of minutes. 2 Corinthians 10, 5. I want you to read 2 Corinthians 10, 5 to yourself and tell me how important is your thinking. 2 Corinthians 10, 5. How important is your thinking? He says you need to take some of your thoughts captive to Christ, right? Is that what he says? He says take every thought captive to Christ. How does that work? When our oldest son was little, every Saturday night he would drag me in front of the television to watch his favorite show. And his favorite show was Cops. And to this day I still remember that song, bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Remember that? And he'd say, "Hey Dad, look at there, they got the bad guy, they got the handcuffs on him, they got him in the back of the car, they're taking him to jail." And every Saturday night he'd say, man, Dad, he said, that's what I want to do. I want to get the bad guys off the street. So he went to college, graduated, got a degree in criminal justice and sociology, and he's been in law enforcement now for 12 years, and that's part of what he does. And I was thinking about that and thinking about this verse. Listen carefully to this verse. Take every thought captive. Put the handcuffs on it. To Christ, I think he's the judge. Take every thought captive to Christ. When a thought, when you begin to think in a certain way, or you're faced with a decision or an attitude or an action, and you're not really sure about you really should do that as a Christian, then you need to put the handcuffs on that, and you need to go before the judge. And you need to get his opinion. You need to pray about that. You need to open his word and see what he says about that. You need to talk to some people who have a long obedience in the same direction and get some life wisdom from them. And you need to put all of that together. And if you make the decision that says, you know, I shouldn't be thinking this way or living this way or doing this way, then you not only need to put the handcuffs on that, you need to incarcerate that and put it away from your life. Take every thought captive to Christ. It all goes back to the way we think. As a man thinks within himself, so is he. Let your mind dwell on these things. You know what I'm going to guess this morning? I'm going to guess that I'm going to guess that I'm not the only person that needs this lesson. I'm going to guess that we all do. Well, I'm supposed to quit at 10:15 and there's a glare on that clock, but I think it says, it's 10:13. I'm done. Thank you all very much. Look forward to the day.